We are in a new Cold War with China, and we better start realizing it.
You have said that Trump is going to ramp it up if the Chinese don't stick by a promise that they probably can't keep. So it's going to get worse.
You go to places like in Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania and tell people how good free trade is, I guarantee you they don't share that sentiment.
Trump's trade war is guilty until proved innocent. And the arguments that Steve has put forward are conjectural and speculative at best. Now for the main event, and again, the resolution reads, President Trump's trade-related initiatives against China deserve broad public support. Taking the affirmative, Steve Moore. Steve, please come to the stage. Taking the negative, me. Which means I must recuse myself as moderator and yield that spot to Dave Smith for the rest of the evening. Dave, please come to the stage.
Thank you very much, Gene. How about that opening comic? He was great. All right. Jane, can we... Jane, there you are. Can we please close the voting? That's that. All right. By the way, I didn't really think it was necessary for Gene to... make Stephen come out again. Anyway, okay. So at one more time, the resolution reads... do I have the resolution here somewhere? Oh, sorry. Is it on the sheet?
President Trump's trade-related initiatives against China deserve broad public support.
I am not doing a great job as moderator so far. All right. For the opening for the affirmative, 17 and a half minutes. Stephen, come on up. Take it away.
Thank you. Thank you. Dave and Gene, great to be with you.
We have to put the resolution on the recording. President Trump's trade-related initiatives against China deserve broad public support. Take it away, Steve.
Great. So, I just actually was in the White House a little bit earlier today, and just a week or two ago, I had dinner with the president. He had about 30 people for dinner, and that was kind of a fun thing. And it was really kind of interesting because it was his dinner, and he, you know, Trump likes to talk, and he didn't have the teleprompter, and he's just kind of rambling on. And but he's a very entertaining guy, and he sees one of the governors, because there were about 20 governors at this meeting, and they were eating dinner and they were sipping their wine, and Trump just interrupted himself and he said, "Oh, governor," he said, "do you know that I don't drink?" By the way, how many of you knew that Trump doesn't drink? I've been around him all the time. It never occurred to me that he didn't drink. And so he said, and the governor kind of nodded his head and said, "Yes, Mr. President, I've heard that about you." And Trump says, "Can you imagine me if I drank?" That's a pretty funny guy. I do like Donald Trump. I wish he would kind of make fun of himself more often. So when I first met Donald Trump, which was almost exactly 4 years ago, I think it was January of 2016. The campaign was just getting going. And my buddy Larry Kudlow and I, by the way, how cool is it Larry Kudlow is the most important economist in the world today? Is that awesome or what? We all love Larry. And so Larry and I went to go see Trump. And he's, you know, and I have to tell you that I had a very negative opinion of Donald Trump at that time. I thought he was kind of a blowhard. I thought his run for presidency was just kind of a publicity stunt. But, you know, there was something going on with Trump at that time, and I thought, well, let's go see, you know, and I'd never met him, you know, so I thought this could be interesting. And we went, to down Fifth Avenue to Trump Tower, and we went up to the 63rd floor and spent about an hour with him. And, you know, he's a very engaging, charismatic guy. I really do like him a lot personally. But, you know, we had a long discussion about the economy. He's actually kind of a good listener and good arguer. He likes to argue, which is a good thing, I think. And after towards the end of the meeting, he said, "Well, I'd like you and Larry to be my senior advisors on the economy for this campaign." And, you know, literally our jaws dropped, and I didn't even know what to say. And Larry kind of broke this sun silence by saying, "Well, at that time, Donald," he said, "Donald, you know, we can't be your economic advisors because you're a trade protectionist and, you know, we're for free trade." And I'll never forget, Trump got very angry. He slammed his fist on the table. He said, "I'm not a trade protectionist. I understand, I'm a businessman. I understand the importance of global commerce and this and that." He said, "But I think America's getting ripped off, and I don't think we've got a free trade in this country, and I don't think that it's these other countries are playing by the rule. And he said, I don't think we have a level playing field. And what he said to us was kind of interesting. He said, just why don't you guys just go look at the evidence? Just look at what's going on with our tariffs and these other countries' tariffs. So we did, and I started looking at the evidence, and lo and behold, this free trader, look, I worked at the Cato Institute, Heritage Foundation. I was good friends with Milton Friedman, who was a unilateral free trader. He believed we should have no tariffs regardless of what other countries do. But I started looking at this, and I looked at the evidence, and I could see that, lo and behold, Donald Trump had a point, that if you looked at the tariffs that we were imposing on China, now this is before he imposed the tariffs that he has, we were at about 4%. You know, our average tariff on all goods and services that come to the United States were about 4%. And China was at about 12%, or three times higher. And not only that, but, the biggest problem with China is what we call the non-tariff trade barriers, that they had all sorts of other kind of barriers that made it really very difficult for American companies to sell our stuff abroad. And by the way, it was the same with a lot of these Asian countries. Japan was up here, we were down here. The Europeans were about twice as higher as we were. I thought, well, this is interesting. Now, what did Trump... Now, here's the more important thing. When you think about Trump and China, and by the way, as well as Trump and, Europe as well, that his idea, what I call the Trump trade doctrine, is that the United States, everyone has to sell to the United States. Why? Because you said it very well. We consume everything, right? We are a, $20 trillion economy, and almost all that, we consume and then some, as you just said. And so every country in the world needs access to America's, $15 trillion consumer market. And that gives the United States some power. And some, I will use the word leverage, because we do have leverage over the rest of the world. Every country has to compete with us. And as Trump used to say to me, Steve, he said, if we can't trade with China, we sneeze. If they can't trade with us, I should maybe use this metaphor, they catch pneumonia. But, anyways, there is some truth to that. They need to trade with the United States. Now, I have to say, I have a big advantage here. If we had debated this maybe 2 months ago, it would have been harder for me to make the case. But the fact is that Trump got very, very tough with China. By the way, let me just say, as a pure political matter, I believe that it was the China. There were two issues that won the election for Trump. And I'm not saying this approvingly or disapprovingly. I'm just saying it as a matter of political fact. The two issues that won the election for Trump were China and immigration. No doubt about it. And that's what won him in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Ohio and Wisconsin and Iowa. Regardless of how we feel about those issues, I got to tell you, you go to places like in Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania and tell people how good free trade is, I guarantee you they don't share that sentiment. Those of us who believe in the virtues of free trade, and I certainly do, we haven't done a very good job of selling the benefits to a vast, vast number of Americans. And I was always frustrated, by the way, with some of my free trade friends at places like Cato and Reason and so on, who would say, what's wrong with these people? Why don't they understand, that trade is good? And I'd say, look, if they don't think trade is good, they're not the problem, we are, because we're the ones who are supposed to be, selling the virtues of free trade. Now, so Trump is using this idea of using American power to force other countries to do what we want them to do. And I have no problem with that. I have no problem at all. I love what Trump has done with NATO. And he's basically said to NATO, look, you want us to play here, you want us to defend you, you're going to start paying more of your own money for defense, and if you don't, we're out of here. Now, that ruffled a lot of feathers in Washington, but guess what? Guess what the Europeans are doing now? They're paying more because they have to have the United States in NATO, or the NATO system falls apart. And the same thing with trade. He's basically said to China, we're going to hit you with, 10, then 15, 20% tariffs on a huge swath of their trade to the United States. And lo and behold, after 2 years, if you look at the deal that was actually consummated and signed into law, in fact, I was just at the 2 weeks ago, I was at the White House when they had the kind of ceremonial signing of that. You have to say that Trump won. You have to. I mean, now you may say it wasn't worth the price because it did hurt our economy. There's no doubt about it. The trade war with China, in my opinion, knocked about half a percentage point off of GDP in 2017. I mean, 2018 and 2019, and that's a lot. It's not insignificant. But now where we are is China, if, and that's a big if they actually abide by this agreement, they will, their imports of American products, that is American-made products to China, will rise by about $150 billion. It's a lot of money. That's a lot of production. That's very, very good news for American farmers and our manufacturers and our technology companies and so on. That's a good thing when they buy more of our steel and our cars and all of these things. And by the way, the Chinese love American culture. They love American things. And with those lower tariffs, they probably will buy a lot more of the stuff. They'll buy more of our petroleum products and so on. There's a lot of jobs attached to that. The other thing that China has agreed to in this deal, and by the way, this is only phase one. I will concede the fact that this, I've said this many times on Fox News and CNN, this is the epic battle of our time. Will China or the United States be the world economic superpower of the next 25 and 50 years? I mean, that is the issue of our time. It's not climate change and, you know, this and that. It's, you know, you cut me, I bleed red, white, and blue. I want the United States to retain our position as the world economic superpower, in no small part because China's gone communist. They've gone communist. This is the red China is back. And by the way, that's one of the reasons I do think we're going to outcompete them, because they have moved towards a command and control kind of economic model. And somebody, anyone in this room, show me anywhere at any time where command and control and central planning has worked, because I can't find a single example anywhere. So Trump, I think, scored a big political victory. I think it's good for United States economy going forward. I think we're going to see a strong 2020 economy. And it is also true, as part of this trade war with China that is now in a stage of truce, I'm always asked, well, what if they don't abide? By the way, I forgot to mention, the other big thing in the trade deal is the intellectual property protection. And this may be the most important thing in terms of the abuse. You know, the way I put it is, you know, for the last 20 years, we've been in an abusive relationship with China. They abused us. We opened up our markets to them. They didn't open up their markets to us. And it wasn't a big problem when there were $3 or $4 trillion economy just getting going, but now they're the second largest economy in the world, and you treat someone who's an adult differently than you do a child. And so we are now in a situation, you know, over the last 10 years, where what we produce, most of us in this room and people around the country, more and more of us produce intellectual property, you know, inventions, patents, copyrights, technology, computer software, all of these things. That's just a form of intellectual property. Drugs, vaccines. We can't live in a world where the second largest, we're producing this stuff, and, you know, just a new drug, for example, can cost $1 or $2 billion of research to develop that drug. Well, you need a patent so that you can sell it, so you can make money on it, so we can make future drugs to win the race against the cure. If you've got the second largest economy in the world that's just stealing the stuff and just, you know, copying it and then, you know, selling it in China, that inhibits innovation, and it's stealing, right? It's just stealing. Intellectual property is as important as, you know, physical property. So if Trump prevails here in terms of enforcement, then I think it's hard to argue it's not a good thing for the United States. Now, you could argue that it wasn't worth the cost, you know, because as I said, there was a hit to our economy from this trade war. And, you know, my view is, yeah, we took a hit, but, you know, over time, this is going to pay big dividends. Now, finally, the question is, what happens if China does not comply? And I think there's a pretty, not a very high, but I would say at least a 50% chance they're not going to comply. These people lie, they cheat, they steal. That's what communists do. And so the question is, what happens then? And the fact is, Trump is going to, you know, there's an enforcement mechanism here, and it's basically he comes back with the billy club of terrorists and hits them over the head again with it. And the reason, by the way, that, you know, people say that the United States bore the whole cost of the tariff. I don't know. I'll be interested in your view on that. You know, there are a lot of economists who disagree and disagree on that. I never bought that for a minute. If you raise the price of, you know, the fundamental law of economics is that demand curves are downward sloping. if the price of something goes up, people buy less of it. And when you put a tariff on something, the price goes up, so people buy less of it. And this is exactly what happened with the tariffs. We imposed the tariffs on them, and what started to happen is because Americans started buying less of Chinese goods and services relative to the amount that they used to, what started happening is the factories started leaving China. They've left for Vietnam, and they left for India, and they left for Thailand and other countries because guess what? By moving a factory out of China when we're imposing a 20% tariff and moving it to Vietnam, now they didn't have to pay the 20% tariff when they came to the United States. And I think that's what spooked the Chinese and the Beijing government and President Xi, and I think that's why they came to the bargaining table. And I've used this kind of metaphor before, but you know, I don't know about you, but I have two. Do you have any older brothers? No. Oh, okay. So you have young brothers?
Yes.
Did you beat the crap out of them? Or? Yeah. Okay, because you know, I'm the third, you know, I have two older brothers. And you know, so my whole youth, you know, my brothers just beat the crap out of me, right? And you know, what they would do is they would just bang the crap out of me, and then they'd pin me on the floor. And they do that until you cry uncle, right? And, you know, so I cried uncle a lot. That's what happened with China here. You know, they were pinned to the floor, and Trump, brought them to heel and made them cry uncle. I think it's a very positive thing for the United States. I hope going forward China does abide by this. You know, look, trade is absolutely you don't have to argue with me about the fact that, you know, when two countries or two people or two entities, businesses voluntarily trade, that's the magic of the market. By definition, they are better off. Final thing I'll say, what am I down to, 2 minutes?
3 minutes.
I don't even need 3 minutes. The final thing I will say is that, you know, I started by saying that Milton Friedman, who was one of my great, great heroes, I love Milton Friedman, he was a unilateral free trader. He believed that the United States should be like Hong Kong. Hong Kong just is a free trade zone. You can bring anything into Hong Kong, and they don't impose any tariffs and so on. And I used to believe that, but I have to confess, you know, Trump has changed my opinion a little bit about trade. Because we do have American power, and we can wield that power to force other countries to play by the rules, I think in this case, his tariff policy has paid off. And the irony of all this, and I'll stop with this, and I want to see what you say about this one, Gene. The irony is that because of Trump's trade policies, we may actually see freer trade and lower tariffs, not higher tariffs, and less free trade. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, very good. Gene, 17 and a half minutes for the negative.
Thanks. In urging you to vote no on this resolution, I speak not only as a free trader, but as a libertarian. President Trump's trade-related initiatives against China do not deserve a broad public support, since we libertarians are a sizable part of that public. And of course, I also hope that non-libertarians will appreciate my argument. I'll be talking about rights and consequences. Because Trump's trade policies are violating our rights, there is a heavy burden of proof to demonstrate that the consequences justify that rights violation, and that burden can't be sustained. Start with libertarianism's core tenet, the zero aggression principle. We don't deny that it might be acceptable in certain cases to commit aggression, but since zero aggression is the default position, acts of aggression by the state require a high degree of confidence that some greater good is being served. In this case, we're dealing with the government's assault on our right to engage in capitalist acts with consenting adults as both buyers and sellers. The government's double-digit taxes, otherwise called tariffs, clearly hobble that right. Karl Marx thought capitalists rob us of the fruits of our labor. Were Marx alive today, he might recognize that the state robs us rather than the capitalists, and that tariffs are one of those ways. But if Steve Moore and President Trump want to call for a voluntary boycott of Chinese goods to pressure the Chinese into ending policies they dislike, then they're free to do so. Trump has access to 21 million tweet followers. He can marshal huge support for that voluntary policy. I wouldn't participate, mainly because I regard it as an inspiring win-win that stores like Walmart can lift the living standards of Americans by selling them cheap goods made in China, while also lifting the living standards of Chinese workers from grinding $2-a-day poverty. But I'd have no right to call these methods unethical, since they involve voluntary action by consenting adults. But of course, that is not what Steve is arguing for. Steve is calling for the iron fist of government to get us to comply. To justify Trump's punitive tariffs, Steve should be able to demonstrate beyond a reasonable doubt that the leader we're supposed to trust with this trade war understands the benefits of free trade. Yet, Trump is almost completely clueless on the subject. He clearly views the nation's trade deficit as a businessman's profit and loss statement, in which losses are suffered with a trade deficit and profits are earned if there's a trade surplus. I won't insult Steve's intelligence by asking him to defend this cockeyed view. The real benefits from trade come not from exports, but from imports. As Steve knows, a trade deficit is made up for by foreign investment in the U.S. economy, and trade deficits widen when the U.S. economy is prospering, not the other way around. So Steve is asking us to support a trade war led by a president who happens to be a bloviating ignoramus on free trade. That should be reason enough to dismiss the claim that Trump's tariffs are part of a brilliant bargaining scheme to ultimately make trade more free. As I'm sure Steve will agree, trade deficits with China will persist no matter what. So Trump will always think U.S. Inc. is suffering red ink in dealing with China. What about the economic effects of Trump's trade war? Well, since Steve was once a member of the Wall Street Journal's editorial board, he might agree with a scorching journal editorial that appeared last month. The editorial begins, quote, "The evidence of economic harm from tariffs keeps piling up. Two studies out this month indicate, again, that U.S. tariffs are paid almost entirely by American consumers, while illustrating how they also act as a drag on U.S. exports," unquote. The findings are surprisingly dire. When the U.S. levies taxes on imports in the form of tariffs, the foreign producers affected often lower prices in order to stay competitive. But that hasn't happened in this case. According to a study quoted in the editorial, quote, "Approximately 100% of these import taxes have been passed on to U.S. importers and consumers," unquote. This is not only hurting consumers, but domestic firms as well, since more than half of the costly goods are inputs domestic firms use to make other products. A Federal Reserve Board study published in December, also quoted by the journal, concluded that, quote, "For manufacturing employment, a small boost from the import protection effect of tariffs is more than offset by larger drags from the effects of rising input costs and retaliatory tariffs imposed by China," unquote. The Fed study also speaks about the long-term harm to manufacturing from the trade war, quote, "The increase in uncertainty generated by recent rounds of tariff increases may be one of the ways in which the effects of past policy persist," unquote. Trump signed a phase one trade deal with China last month, whose main benefit is that it's curtailed Trump's plans to increase the financial bloodshed with stiffer tariffs. But under the agreement, the existing tariffs have only been partially scaled back, so most of the domestic carnage continues. The deal also includes a bizarre provision that is based on managed trade rather than free trade. Trade managed from the top down. That's the strange pledge from China's government that over the next 2 years, its economy will buy an additional $200 billion. Steve quoted it at $150 billion, but the pledge is $200 billion, which would involve a 45% increase per year in China's purchases from us that the government is dictating from the top down. $200 billion more in U.S. exports than its purchase in 2017, which is quite unlikely to happen. And since it's quite unlikely to happen, Steve has just put us on notice that if it doesn't happen, the assault on our rights and the assault on our economy by Trump is going to be ratcheted up. So far, we've dealt with the trade war's assault on our rights and on our economic well-being. Now let's deal with three myths that have been used to justify the trade war. When a state wages war against another state, that state often portrays itself as the passive victim. In the trade war the U.S. has declared against China, we've been told that the U.S. has never engaged in what Steve called the dishonest and dirty tactics that China has perpetrated. That myth is punctured, has been punctured by groups that that Steve tells us he reads, by the Cato Institute, and by a Wall Street Journal op-ed whose headline reads, quote, "America's abusive trade practices," unquote, followed by a subhead that reads, quote, "China has legitimate grievances too. The World Trade Organization often looks askance at U.S. anti-dumping tariffs." The article describes the crony capitalist practices against China that were ramped up under President Obama and have continued to flourish under Trump. The tariffs the U.S. imposes on imports from China based on accusations that China is dumping its goods in our market. What exactly is dumping, you might ask? Well, dumping is a case in which a Chinese firm sells a product for a lower price in the U.S. market than is charged in China's market. So for normal folks, getting dumped on would be a happy experience, and the best kind of dumping would involve a Chinese producer dumping goods on us for free. But in the world of wonks, dumping is considered a violation, entitling the victimized nation to slap a tariff on the goods being dumped, or slap a duty, as it's called, on the goods being dumped. And in the world of America's crony capitalism, our side has been able to claim we're getting dumped on even when it's not been happening. You might think it's hard to confuse prices in the U.S. with prices charged for the same good in China, but then you'd be underestimating the hired guns who work for the U.S. industries seeking trade protection from foreign competition. In the case of China, there are often no prices available in its home market, so the hired guns have a field day constructing fictional prices from which dumping charges can be calculated. There's an even more blatant practice in which prices that contradict the U.S. case for dumping are simply ignored using a method aptly called zeroing. The author of the journal op-ed proposes that the U.S. offer to end these trade abuses as a bargaining chip with the Chinese. But as he observes, quote, "offering a carrot instead of a stick seems alien to the blunt bluster of Mr. Trump's approach to deal-making," unquote. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer might also object if we admit to our anti-dumping scams, since Lighthizer was a legal hired gun in the anti-dumping field before becoming Trump's trade rep. This brings us to the second myth. When a state wages war against another state, it generally portrays itself as having first considered all the peaceful ways of settling grievances. In this case, we are told that the U.S. can't use the World Trade Organization to challenge China's trade practices because China doesn't comply with that organization's rulings. The evidence is that China's record of compliance is better than ours. An academic study on this subject, P. peer-reviewed, scrutinizes the 43 cases in which China has been a target of trade disputes from its entry into the World Trade Organization in December 2001 through December 2018. The author finds that, quote, China has timely and satisfactorily implemented WTO tribunals in 42 out of the 43 cases. He concludes, quote, that China's record of compliance suggests that the dispute settlement mechanism has been largely effective in inducing compliance. He also observes, quote, ironically, while the U.S. has been accusing China of not complying with WTO rules, the U.S.'s record of compliance is evidently worse than that of China. The U.S. refusal to change the practice of zeroing has been a blunt denial of its World Trade Organization obligations and outright disrespect for World Trade Organization rulings. In addition, while China has never been subject to any request for retaliation as a result of failure to comply, the U.S. has faced 15 such requests. Which brings us to the third myth. When a state wages war against another state, it generally exaggerates the harm that the other state has perpetrated against it. In this case, we are told that China's massive theft of our intellectual property comes to hundreds of billions a year and that it's been threatening our private sector incentives to produce intellectual property. To consider the plausibility of this claim, take the figures on the portion of gross domestic product allocated to private investment in intellectual property, which mainly consists of research and development and software. That investment came to $400 billion in 2000, just before China became a major trader in the world scene, and has since climbed to a stunning $1 trillion in 2019 at a record high of nearly 5% of GDP. So if our domestic industries feel sapped by China's piracy of our intellectual property, they certainly don't show it in their actions. While I question Steve's high estimate, the high estimate that Steve has mentioned in the past of hundreds of billions of year per year in intellectual property theft, it would not be so terrible if we really were subsidizing the Chinese economy to that extent. Ironically, our economy benefits from the awful legacy of Chinese central planning, which is what has made Chinese labor so cheap. The U.S. bought $540 billion in goods from China in 2018, and we easily got a $200 to $300 billion discount on that purchase because of China's cheap labor. But even more to the point, when Steve speaks of us stealing our intellectual property, he ignores the difference between stealing and putting that intellectual property to some use. Given the heavy burden of central planning in China that Steve himself points out, it's unlikely that China will be put much of that stolen technology to any good use. So to a great extent, such theft is not really theft at all. And so what are we left with? We are left with a situation in which Steve is on the points of a dilemma. On the one hand, concerned about China becoming a superpower in technology, as though we should really care, or as though those people in England, Canada, Sweden, Norway seem to get along just fine, even though their governments are not dominant in technology. But does Steve really believe there is much chance of that happening in a country where he himself says is increasingly subject to central planning? How likely is that? Is that really something to worry about in any case? And is that really something that will be very likely in any case? So might there be a better way? Well, start by firing Trade Rep Robert Lighthizer as a corrupting influence and put an end to our anti-dumping scams. Improve our record of compliance with the World Trade Organization and press claims against China with that organization that are legitimate. And abolish all tariffs, since they're an assault on our rights and on our material well-being. And meanwhile, vote no on this debate resolution. Thanks.
All right. Very good. So we've heard from the affirmative and we've heard from the negative. We will now have 5-minute rebuttals from each. And after the rebuttals, we're going to take questions. The debaters can ask each other questions. I can ask a couple questions. And most of all, we want to hear from you guys. So we're going to do 5-minute rebuttal each. And then you guys can line up at the microphone and you can ask your questions. We do ask that you keep them as questions and not life stories. All right. Stephen, 5 minutes rebuttal from the affirmative.
Okay, Gene, there was a lot there I agreed with and a lot I disagreed with. And let me start with, I think, the central premise. I know what Donald Trump would say if he were here, and I happen to agree with him on this. We did not start the trade war. We didn't start this trade war. They started this 20 years ago. I mean, when you have a situation where our average terrorists are 1/3 as high as theirs are, how can anybody in their right mind say that we're the villain here? This is why, by the way, I think one of the great things Donald Trump has done, and you're a libertarian, why should we subject ourselves to the World Trade Organization? The United States should pull out of every international organization across the globe. We should never submit our own policies to groups like that. So, okay. Look, this policy I told Donald Trump it's a very risky and dangerous strategy. And it was a risky and dangerous strategy. But the fact is, now we are where we are, and we've got a pretty good deal that is going to, in my opinion, improve the United States economy. And it's going to force China to lower their tariffs to have a level playing field. And that's a good thing. I mean, you look at the result of this, you know, as my parents used to say, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Did it work? Yeah, at least so far it has. Now, I agree with you that, look, you say that terrorists violate rights. Yeah, I guess there's something to that, but a tariff is just a tax. A tariff is a tax. I hate taxes. Everybody in this room hates taxes. I know there are a lot of libertarians who don't want taxes. I don't want taxes. I want them to be as low as possible, but a tariff is a tax. And I don't see why it is any more of a violation of your right to impose a tax on a product that's coming into the United States when you consume it than when you pay your sales tax here in New York. Right? It's just a tax on your consuming a product. And frankly, I'd rather put a tax on a product that's, you know, made in China than one made here in the United States. You know, so sue me. I bleed red, white, and blue. I think it's, you know, we should, you know, but I don't look, my theory is I disagree with Trump on steel tariffs. I disagree with Trump on aluminum tariffs. I disagree with him on auto tariffs. It's never a smart thing to impose a tariff that's a protectionist policy to help one industry. But I think when it's about, you know, getting rid of abuses of other countries, then I think it can be used effectively. I think Trump has proven that. Let's see. What else? You were making the point about... this idea about, I fundamentally disagree with that Wall Street Journal editorial. I did read it, and I just don't think it's right. How can anybody who believes in downward demand curves believe that when you put a 20% on a product coming from abroad, that the full cost of that is borne by the American consumer? It doesn't make any sense. And by the way, if that were true, then China could have just 5 years ago raised their prices by 20%, right? All they would have had, why wouldn't they have just raised their prices if the full cost of it was going to be borne by Americans? Why didn't they just raise their prices by 20% 2, 3, 4 years ago? And the answer is because people would have bought fewer of their products. And that's why this idea that the American consumer paid it all, I think, is just really bad economics. And by the way, the reason we know that that's not true is because if that were the case, why would China oppose the tariffs at all if the full costs were going to be borne by the United States? Couple last points. Dumping. I agree with you on dumping. Look, if countries want to give us stuff for free, I'm all in favor of that. So I think Trump is wrong on dumping. On intellectual property, here's where I think you and I fundamentally disagree. We cannot go forward as a nation and continue to produce this incredible, you know, whether it's drugs, vaccines, computer software, new kinds of manufacturing and so on, that toss billions of dollars to produce. There's reason that we have patent laws. You protect people's intellectual property because that actually encourages more intellectual property and more enhancement of new products and new, you know. And I have a lot, just give you one good example of how abusive it is in China. I have a good friend who's the head of Apple. This is one example. And he said, I was meeting with him. He was the head of the government affairs in Washington. And he said, Steve, how many Apple stores do you think there are in China? And I said, I don't know, 50. He said there's probably about 200 Apple, retail Apple stores in China. And then he said to me, Steve, do you know how many of those are actually owned by Apple? He said about 10 of them. The other 190, literally what the Chinese do. This gives you a sense of how abusive it is over there and how they have no respect for private property rights. What they literally do is they open a store and they will slap in it. They'll just take the Apple insignia and put it on the wall and say, we're Apple. That'd be like, you and I, ma'am, saying, hey, let's open up a McDonald's. We'll just put the golden arches up and we'll call ourselves McDonald's. You can't do that. And it's just a microcosm what's going on. They have no respect for private properties, and we have to enforce our private property, both with intellectual and physical property.
Okay. Gene, 5 minutes of rebuttal, and then we go to the questions.
Well, Steve has just told us, which is something I knew, that he opposed Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum. He opposed those taxes. He didn't like them. Steve, that's great that you feel that way. And yet, he's asking us to trust this bloviating ignoramus with these policies. He's on the horns of a dilemma. Steve told us that he used to agree with Milton Friedman, but guess who convinced him that Milton Friedman... the same bloviating ignoramus. Steve... Come back to us. Look, Steve, the reason why I applauded, I mentioned the World Trade Organization. I'm willing to go with that managed trade business. Milton Friedman said, we need a constitutional amendment. A constitutional amendment will read, Congress should make no law, period, charging. He wasn't an anarchist, Steve, you know that. Come on, you like that. All right. That shall make no law which will... impose a tax on imports or will subsidize exports, period. No law. Doing that, and we can become a beacon of freedom to the world. And we're rich enough, and it will benefit our economy to do that. And now Steve was persuaded by Trump that Milton Friedman was wrong. Well, too bad for Steve. You don't have to be persuaded by Trump the way Steve was. And now, why did I say that? If Steve, that's why I said, if you don't want to deal with the World Trade Organization, fine. All I said was that we are the delinquents when it comes to the World Trade Organization, not the Chinese. The Chinese, obviously, partly because they're weaker, they have it in their interests. To defend us. Now Steve also wants us to bleed for the Apple stock. Apple stock, by the way, I looked it up, it was at $4.6 billion capitalization in the year 2000, and now it's at $1 trillion. So if the Apple stockholders want me to pay these ridiculous tariff taxes in order to defend their rights to have more stores in China, I will only tell them, as a potential philanthropist, there are other people in greater need than they for my philanthropy. Steve wants us to stand up to these guys. The fact of the matter is that we are a powerful economy. And again, Steve seems to be caught on the horns of a dilemma. He himself knows... He himself has the insight to recognize that a centrally planned economy like China isn't really stealing our intellectual property. Yeah, they're poaching on some of the Apple stores. Well, again, I'll wait for Apple stock to go back to $4.6 billion in capitalization before I start worrying about that overly, before anybody can ask me that the government has a right to violate my rights by taxing me with a trade war. And then Steve is telling us on top of that that if China doesn't abide by this ridiculous promise to buy 200 billion more of our goods, which is going to be a 45% increase per year, which is obviously just, what was that agreement? It was clearly just Trump wanted something off the table. And then on top of that, what else does, Trump wanted something off the table. He wanted this trade war no longer hanging over his head. We've got a phase one. He He's going to claim tonight in the State of the Union address. Maybe he had Steve help him on that passage. And we're winning the trade war against China, you know, and we're going to be on to victory with our phase one. But it's not going to work out. The Chinese cannot ratchet up 45%, and that's managed trade. So I want to say to Steve, come back to us. Come back to us as the pure, great free trader you are, because we need you. You're a talented man. Well, what else? I mean, again, amazingly, Steve then disavowed the Wall Street Journal editorial that summarized six different studies. The Wall Street Journal editorial said they keep piling up and they keep saying the same thing from every reputable source. And now Steve thinks Steve has actually told you, maybe I can't say this crazy thing, that the 20%, 25% tariffs would have been imposed on the Chinese. No, they're imposed on us, but of course they're also heard. It means that fewer goods are being sold. The Chinese didn't want to ratchet up their price, but it means that we are paying big time for those tariffs. Our rights are being violated, and there is a better way. The better way is negotiate through the World Trade Organization, clean up your act, because it is possible to do that. Or the even better way is come back to us, Steve, and become a radical for a change and advocate Milton Friedman's view that we have nothing to gain and everything to lose by not being a beacon to the free world and simply saying we have open borders with respect to trade. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. So now we're at the question portion. So if you guys want to ask questions, you can line up by the microphones. Of course, at any point, if you two – oh, you have a microphone right there, Stephen. If at any point you two want to ask each other questions –
I do.
Okay.
I
so
do.
Go ahead.
I'm rip-roaring ready to go.
So here we go.
I want to get to this issue of being Americans, you know, American consumers bearing the whole cost of the tariffs.
Not the whole cost. I'm not saying the whole cost.
You cited the Wall Street Journal, which said that the burden of the tariffs were borne by American consumers.
Not the 100% burden. Not the 100%.
My point is that when there is absolutely a substitution effect. That in fact, what happens is let's say we put 100% on tariffs from China. What happens is people stop buying stuff from China and they buy stuff from Japan or Korea or Taiwan or Thailand or even better yet, from the United States. So it's hard to say, and the people who are the big loser there, of course, are the Chinese, because they can't sell the stuff and they lose the jobs. And Trump used that hammer to force China. But are you saying there's not a downward sloping demand curve for products from China?
Steve, what I'm really saying is that basically very similar to what you've said. I'm only saying that the Wall Street Journal editorial made it clear that certain things that make it easier when tariffs are imposed have not happened. The Chinese sellers have not rolled back their prices. They're still being, I don't know why, maybe because of the government. I'm only saying that in a way, I'm not that interested in this, because Steve, you're acting like a shill for Trump when you say, hey, look, guys, I know that it costs you money. You've said that. I know that it's painful, but look, hey, you know, it's hurting the Chinese too. Okay, fine. I don't wish to necessarily go there. I'm only saying that it's a violation of our rights and a violation of our material well-being. And when you say that, hey, look, you know, taxes. Yeah, I know. We're all against taxes, but just grin and bear it, because Mr. Trump, our bloviating ignoramus, knows what he's doing. I'm only trying to say that's all of a piece. It clearly is painful. You and I can agree about the pain. If we're a little further apart, fine. It's violating our rights, and it's exacting material pain. And on top of that, you have said that Trump is going to ramp it up if the Chinese don't stick by a promise that they probably can't keep. So it's going to get worse. The burden of proof is on you to prove that this is worth it. And there are recourses. There are other ways to go, as I keep saying. World Trade Organization or Milton Friedman, one or the other.
You know, just my view that we couldn't. I am proud that we finally had a president. Aren't you? For the first time in 30 years, that basically said to China, we stood eye to eye with China and said, "Hell no, we're not going to be involved in this."
Well, we also had a president who ignored the fact that ever since Obama and through his administration, we have acted like cheats and crony capitalists and exacted duties on goods from China because of this ridiculous anti-dumping thing. Read the Cato Institute report on that. So if you're proud of that, you should also be ashamed of the fact that Trump didn't own up to the fact that we act like schmucks also, Steve. Yeah. And you also might look, own up I'm, to the fact that we look, don't abide, but we thumb our nose but, at the World look, Trade Organization because we keep maintaining okay, our right to engage okay, in this fine. Bullshit.
Do we
you should be ashamed of.
Do we sin, of course, but is there anyone like this idea that the World Trade Organization that China is abiding by the World Trade Organization? Come on.
They have
for 30 years violated every single tenet of it. China does is violate it. The World Trade Organization says that we shouldn't be doing this. Come on.
All right, I have lost control of this stage. I swear to God, I forgot I was moderating for a minute there. I was just like, I'm watching.
My heart
this
goes out
awesome.
To Steve. Just comment on
that. I was like,
that.
Man, Nick Gillespie is blowing it this week. Oh, shoot, it's me. Okay. All right,
May I just comment briefly? Look, again.
I know you're a big fan of the World Trade Organization.
Steve, I would roll it back and do Friedman's thing, as I keep saying. So listen to me. But look, the point is that Steve clearly has had problems hanging around Trump. The fact of the matter is that a peer-reviewed study has been published on the fact that China clearly finds it in its interest to abide by the WTO rulings and has a... You're going to wave your hands and say that.
They don't do anything. Okay, we're the most protectionist country in the history of the world, and they're abiding by the World Trade Organization. We should have never let them in the fucking WTO in the first place.
You know what? That might be a point of agreement.
The difference between me and Steve is I am citing a peer-reviewed study that was delivered at the Cato Institute, which he respects, and Steve is pulling a statement out of his ass.
What are you going to believe, a peer-reviewed study or your own eyes?
Good.
All right.
Now Steve is doing a great imitation of our bloviating ignoramus, President Trump.
All right. We can add more onto this in closing arguments. Before I want to ask a couple. I want to ask one question of each of you, and then we'll get to as many audience questions as we can. Okay, Gene, do you think Trump is a bloviated ignoramus? I'm kidding. Gene, let me ask you something Stephen brought up, which I've heard a lot of people who have been traditionally for free trade but support Trump. I call this the 4D chess argument. But so Donald Trump, he did, I believe it was at one of the G7 meetings, where he did say, how about we just eliminate all the tariffs? Since you just conceded the idea that tariffs, the full brunt is not borne by the Americans. It does hurt the Chinese as well. If theoretically, by threatening to elevate tariffs, it resulted in freer trade, would you then say that this strategy was ultimately successful?
May I just say, yes, but we have a bloviating ignoramus who believes that trade deficits are always red ink. So how can you trust him? Yes, but we have a bloviating ignoramus who signed a deal with China that's not going to work out, who's threatening higher tariffs. The burden of proof is on the other side to demonstrate that this could possibly work, the violation of our rights for some greater good, and I don't even think that it's that good. The fact is that it's the imports from China that matter, not the exports. We already have a full employment economy. So from 9 ways till Sunday, the burden of proof is on Steve, and he cannot bear that burden.
Okay. And let me ask you, Stephen, because this was – and Gene touched on this in his opening as well. So you've said that the issue of our time is not climate change or any of this other stuff. It's who's going to be the superpower, America or China. But you also said that communism is back in China. If we've learned anything from the 20th century, it's that communism is a guaranteed failure. So doesn't that kind of resolve itself? If communism is back, is there any chance that they're going to be a superpower?
No, I'm going to bet on the United States. I'm going to bet on Silicon Valley, and I'm going to bet on our entrepreneurs and our innovators. No question about it. I mean, but it is true. They've been growing like gangbusters. I think it's actually sad what's happened in China. And this is one of the reasons, Gene, that I actually am supportive of Trump when it comes especially to China. Because, look, we, in my opinion, we are in a new Cold War with China, and we better start realizing it. Look at the, not just their abusive and predatory trade practices, but look at what they're doing in terms of building up their military, their aggressive stance in the China South Sea. I mean, I actually do believe, I hope and pray I'm wrong about this. I think we're looking at China that's Japan circa 1936. I really do. I think they have designs of taking over, and you ask the people.
Look out, Pearl Harbor. Yeah.
What?
Look out, Pearl Harbor.
Look, yeah. And I think we shouldn't make the mistake that we did, back in the 1930s of just ignoring Japan as they got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then we had to be in a war. We should be very suspicious of this communist regime. We are in a new Cold War, and if you haven't, and I would go beyond that. I would say they were once, an ally and a friend. They're no longer a friend. They are an enemy. And they are a menace, and we should treat them as such. And
okay.
So brief I'm not comment. So sure free okay. trade with a country like that works out so well.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Brief comment. If Steve is basically endorsing the planned pivot to Asia. If you're going to support the pivot to Asia, I ask you what happened when the U.S. pivoted to the Middle East, the awful bloodshed and catastrophes that occurred. If there is a threat from China, then tell Japan. May I finish, please? Steve, I allowed you to talk.
All right,
can I finish
all right.
what I'm saying? Do you think there's a... I believe that if there's a threat from China, then Japan and Vietnam and the Philippines and Russia and India, which are all in that theater, should be told to deal with it. U.S. involvement does more harm than good, vastly more harm than good. And for Steve to beat the war drum is a very dangerous policy for anybody who can't contemplate the hundreds of millions, millions dead from our pivot to the Middle East. We should tell those local nations who are well able to protect themselves, Japan and the rest of them, if you're worried about China being a bully in your backyard, then do something about it. But our government does more harm than good when it gets involved.
All right. Okay, let's get to some audience questions. Before we start wars in Asia, we're going to at least fight a war with Iran. Okay, sir. Sir, right here with the snake, don't tread on me. Oh, no, that's a Cobra Kai. Sure. Either way, it's libertarian. Okay, go ahead, sir. What's your question?
My question is for Steve. So I think it sounds like you're making a political argument. You're saying I think we all agree on the economics of it, that tariffs are bad for both sides, whatever. You're making a political argument that we do it, and in the long run, they'll end up doing what we want because it hurts them. Okay, so that's the optimistic view. I'm interested in what is your pessimistic view. Well, how long do you take this? Let's say it goes on for years, it gets really, really bad. At what point do you say, okay, this is too much, we can't do this anymore?
All right, very good question.
It's a very good question. Look, I think Trump had it exactly right, that China could not withstand, these tariffs, and that they would cry uncle pretty quickly. And they did, after 2 years. And let's be very clear about this. China caved in. And one other point, and Gene, I'd like your response to this. There, in my opinion, there was not a single thing that Donald Trump was asking of China. Lower your tariffs. Stop stealing our intellectual property. Stop the forced technology transfers, where if a company wants to do business in China, they effectively have to give up their ownership. None of those things are unreasonable. So I want to throw this to you. Do you think there's anything that Donald Trump was asking of China that was not a reasonable demand?
If that's all reasonable, fine. What's unreasonable is for any government to use its iron fist to impose taxes on us because he wants us to agree with him about what China is doing. My reaction personally is that would have been, if I want to voluntarily participate in the boycott of Chinese goods, I would have said, we've got 50 other problems in this world that are far more important than what China is doing. We invest $1 trillion a year in intellectual property. We now have a 3.5% unemployment rate. We don't want to jeopardize our growth. We don't want to pay a price. And we don't want to be led by a bloviating ignoramus who thinks all trade deficits are red ink. This is not somebody I can trust.
So, how can he be a bloviated ignoramus if he's created the best economy for the United States in 30 years?
didn't create it?
Well, well, I mean,
it happened,
okay.
Right? It happened in his
okay,
life.
I'll let that rhetorical
we
question
we cut taxes, say. We cut regulation, we promoted American energy, we got government off the back of business, we won two trade wars. I mean, that's a pretty good record. Now we have the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years, the lowest inflation rate in 50 years, the lowest interest rates in 50 years, the biggest wage gains in 30 years. And, you know, what's not to like about that picture?
We've got 2%.
Oh, all right. Gene, a quick response and then to the next question.
Steve, I'm surprised at you because the truth is that we have a 2% growth rate. That's shit. 2%.
It's 2.5.
Is shit.
That's a huge improvement over 1.9% under Obama. Yes, you're right. We wanted 3%. We haven't gotten there. But you, my God, this is the best economy for the U.S. in at least 30 years. And this ignoramus somehow did it, even with the trade war.
All right. Everybody calm down. No heckling, please. And we don't use the term we. I'm a comedian. I contribute to no economy whatsoever. We would all starve if it was just for me. So let's not use the collectivist
Just briefly, there is the good, the bad, and the ugly about Trump's policies. If Steve and I want to talk about the good, we could. But we are talking about the bad and the ugly this evening.
Okay, let's move on to another audience question.
Thank you. This is for Steve. I'd love to get Gene's response also. Steve, you mentioned that China is becoming increasingly command and control. I agree, and that never works out. But given that, wouldn't the correct response be to free up our economy even more rather than add to command and control with tariffs? In other words, how do you justify fighting command and control abroad with command and control at home? Thank you.
Yeah, it's a great question. And look, I mean, I think there's very few presidents in modern times who have moved towards, you know, free markets than Donald Trump. I mean, my God, we passed the biggest tax cut. We've cut our business tax rate in half, which is a huge, huge incentive for people and businesses to move here. We did the 10% repatriation tax. We've imported $1 trillion of capital from the rest of the world into the United States. Think of the jobs that are attached to that. There is no, you know, I've worked with these people. There is no administration, even Ronald Reagan's administration. I love Ronald Reagan. I think he belongs on Mount Rushmore. But the pace of deregulation that is going on under Donald Trump is unrivaled. And we are just getting rid of all of these impediments to growth. So, yeah, absolutely. You fight command and control with free enterprise, but you impose these punitive tariffs on China to try to get them to behave. That's the strategy.
We did. And thanks for the excellent question. The fact of the matter is that we forged a managed trade agreement with China. China is supposedly committing its partially decentralized economy to buy $200 billion more of goods with us over the next 2 years. That's not free trade. That's managed trade. And clearly, it's the only thing that Trump understands. With respect to what Steve just said, my only disagreement is obviously that what government taxes us really is what is in line with what government spends. And when Trump came in and he talked about the waste, fraud, and abuse in government that leads to overspending, he then turned around and did absolutely nothing about it. So that's unfortunately a huge blot on Trump's record. We're running $1 trillion trade deficits, $1 trillion fiscal deficits, I'm sorry, $1 trillion fiscal deficits, and that has been a disaster. So Trump, again, he's the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good, by the way, I agree with Steve, has been deregulation. But to lower taxes and not lower spending, as Milton Friedman said, Steve, as I might remind you, another bit of wisdom from him, when is a tax cut not a tax cut? When it's not matched by spending cuts. So Trump has not really lowered our taxes. He's taxing us by doing all that spending, and that's been a disaster.
Yeah, Stephen, do you want to respond to the record high spending and the growth in the size of government?
Yeah, look, I wrote the book Trumponomics. The essence of Trumponomics is grow, grow, grow. Grow as fast as you can, put people back to work, get American companies more profitable so they will pay more taxes. And even with our tax cut, by the way, are you opposed to cutting our business tax rate from 40% to 20%?
I'm not opposed to it, but I don't regard it as a true tax cut unless the waste, fraud, and abuse is addressed, which has not been addressed.
I disagree with that. I don't like the waste, fraud, and abuse, but all of a sudden you've incentivized companies to move here, because our tax rate is now low. We have the highest business tax rate in the world, and now we have one of the lowest ones. Guess what? Everybody wants to come to the United States right now. And the same thing, you know, with respect to the
score one to Steve. Steve, I agree with that limited point, but try to understand Milton Friedman's point.
I understand.
It's not a tax cut if you don't cut spending.
But it is. Look, that's why marginal tax rates, we actually got more revenues. And did you know in 2019, the United States collected more tax revenues than any other single year in American history? It is not a revenue problem, and you and I agree.
It's a spending problem.
It's a spending problem.
And spending
I completely agree with that.
And then what they spend is what they...
You're right. And spending is tax. Spending is tax.
Okay, on that moment of agreement...
Spending is taxes. Stephen and I agree.
We're going to move on. I love the supply side argument of tax cuts increases revenue to the federal government. I've always said is my least favorite part of tax cuts. All right, let's take the next question.
Okay, the anarchist speaks, hey, Stephen.
All right. Question for Gene. So you expressed concern that Trump is a bloviating ignoramus.
Yes. You got me right there.
Perhaps news that a politician would be such a thing. The question, though, is do we actually need Trump to not be a bloviating ignoramus to pursue useful policies? Like Milton Friedman talked about how economic models work even if people who make them work don't actually understand economics. Maybe Trump just has a really good eye for weakness. Maybe he knows that China's only successful global brand names are Huawei, TikTok, and coronavirus. And maybe he just thinks that China has more to lose.
Well, thank you very much. I guess it's possible, conceivable between heaven and earth, that a bloviating ignoramus who thinks and who specifically said that they're robbing us. What he specifically said was that it's cost us $800 billion a year and we got to get it back. I'm quoting it verbatim. $800 billion a year. He was talking about the trade deficit, the merchandise trade deficit with China. We got to get it back. Unfortunately, if you take him at his word, then he's a dangerous man. He obviously believes that only if you run a trade surplus with another country, he's a pure ignoramus mercantilist. He literally believes that you profit from exports and you lose from imports. So that's, in this particular case, very dangerous. And he's literally threatened, as Steve has just told us, to boost the tariffs, boost the bloodshed that's being imposed on the American people because he wants to bring about some end. It seems as though, if you take Trump seriously, that he will only be happy if we're running a trade surplus with China, which ain't going to happen.
If you call Donald Trump a bloviated ignoramus one more time...
He's a bloviated ignoramus!
I am going to turn into Dan Aykroyd and call you an ignorant slut.
All right?
All right, Fair point. I'm limiting Gene to three more. Three more for the debate.
There are elements of truth in both of those statements.
Is it Gene's wife is in the back nodding? I'm not sure what that means. All right, let's next question. How are you, sir?
Good, thank you. So I've heard tonight as a potential remedy to our supposed trade grievances with China, greater cooperation with and enforcement of the World Trade Organization. And what I wonder from both of is if either or both of you believe that another potential remedy could have or could have been or could still be the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Either one of you guys want to jump on that one first? It was to both of you. Gene?
Well, yeah. The another potential remedy partially could have been the Trans-Pacific Partnership. There are many remedies available. It's very, very clear, again, that we are the bully. In a way, precisely what Steve said, you know, we're the supremo. We don't abide by rulings that we don't like. So we have thumbed our nose at the World Trade Organization. Now, again, I'm of two minds. I'm only saying that if you believe in negotiations and you don't want to go to war, then negotiate through the agency that's available. Don't violate the World Trade Organization rulings, which the U.S. has done. China is a weakling comparatively, and it wants to be able to get into the world arena with other countries. That's why the peer-reviewed study showed that China abides by those rulings, because the weak countries do. However, as I say, all of this stuff is offensive to a libertarian like me. I don't want New York York to negotiate with Massachusetts about trade between New York and Massachusetts. That's offensive. I don't want New York City to negotiate with Chicago about how one city trades with another. It's capitalist acts between consenting adults. And so we should simply outlaw all this bullshit of tariffs and duties and subsidies, close down the Export-Import Bank and fire what's-his-name, who's the trade rep, whose name. And so we should do all of those things radically, of course.
So, look, I just don't agree at all with this blame America first. As I said at the outset, the data is absolutely crystal clear. For the last 30 years, the United States has had the lowest tariffs of any other country. Now, you may argue that that's an advantage of ours, and I wouldn't argue with that. But our tariffs, on average, have been half what they are in Europe and one-third of what they are in Asia, on average. So how in the world can anybody say that we're not the one embodied by the WTO? It's just ridiculous at its base. All these other countries are rampantly violating WTO. They go to these, you know, European bureaucrats, and they rule against the United States. So hell yes, I'd get us the hell out of the World Trade Organization. We are the alpha male economy. We're basically saying we're the policemen now. You're going to play by our rules because you need to trade with us. And we're going to have, now look, on this issue of the TPP, that's a tough one for me. I think there were some flaws in the TPP. But I could be persuaded that Trump made a mistake in pulling it out, because I do think the best – look, you all know from what I've said tonight, I think that China is a real menace on the world scene, and we better wake up to it. And the best strategy in terms of dealing with China is to isolate them. And there's where I think Trump probably made a mistake in picking a fight with Mexico, Canada, Europe. He should have aimed all his guns at China, because they are the villain here.
Well, again, what Steve said was a kind of a non sequitur. I recommend that you read the Cato Institute study about what we do with respect to this crazy circus of claiming that we're being dumped on. It's obviously been a crony capitalist carnival that was unfolded under Obama, and that the World Trade Organization has tried to get us to stop. So the fact of the matter is, we do abuse and we do not abide by World Trade Organization rulings, because we have a crony capitalist system that Trump should have fought. Obama went along with it, loved it, and so does Trump. And there should be a stop to it, and that should be offered, or should be simply rolled back. But so Steve, again, has spent so much time with President Trump, he's not even aware of what the Cato Institute, the people he supposedly respects, have been documenting.
How can the country that runs a trade debt? Look, I agree with you with this trade deficit, trade surplus stuff. Okay, I agree. Trump is wrong about obsessing about it. But the fact is, we want run a trade deficit with virtually every country in the world. So how in the world are we the one that's violating the trade agreements when we run a deficit with every other country?
Steve, that's a non sequitur. The fact of the matter is that we still have very substantial crony capitalist interests that our U.S. trade rep was fighting for in order to get them special privileges. And the World Trade Organization has been imposing this on us. Steve has spent so much time with Trump, he's impervious to sheer information that contradicts Trump's crazy ex cathedra statements. The fact of the matter is that we've been engaging in trade abuses, something called zeroing that we've been engaged in, and we can continue to do it because we don't abide by the World Trade Organization
rules. I know we're coming to the end here, but it's very simple, my argument. We tried your approach for 25 years.
And no, we didn't.
We did. We kept saying, oh, they'll abide by the World Trade Organization. They'll be a good trade partner. And they weren't. And finally, it took a new president, Donald Trump, who said, to hell with this. We're going to hit back at you hard unless you start behaving yourself. And lo and behold, here we are 3 years later, and they've actually agreed to a trade
deal. Steve, I'll recommend
I got to cut you off there. I want to get another question or two if possible. We got to save it for the closing argument. So go ahead. Next question from the audience.
Steve, so you mentioned that China abuses the U.S. So if the U.S. is the dominant one in the trading relationship, and there are, as you mentioned, other production options such as India or Vietnam, why didn't we just leave the trading relationship altogether?
Don't suggest that to Donald Trump. there's no question that over the last 30 years, we've benefited largely from the fact that, you know, you made this point. I think it was a very persuasive point. You know, they're giving, that's why I don't mind dumping. If they want to give this stuff for free, I don't think there's any problem. What I think the problem is not the dumping. It's the fact that they have not opened up their markets to us. And my point is, you know, and I would argue, make this argument with Milton Friedman. We can live in a world where we have very low tariffs and they have high tariffs, and that hurts them. But wouldn't it be better to live in a world where both countries have lower tariffs? And that is the end game. That's why I'm so glad you brought up. Donald Trump did go to the Europeans at the G7 meeting. He said, we'll go to zero tariffs if you will. Every European ran for the high grass. The last thing they want to do is get rid of their tariffs. So they are total trade hypocrites, in my opinion. But look, the best outcome is, I think, if China abides by these deals and we can buy all this low-cost product from us, but they also pay us for the things that we produce and pay us for the intellectual property. I think you're dead wrong on the importance of intellectual property theft. It is rampant in China. They have no protections of intellectual property whatsoever.
Okay. Just let me briefly remind.
Brief response, and then I want to get one more question. Just, so briefly.
Just try to briefly remind the young lady who just asked that question that you were asking this question as though what I want to buy from China is first something that I got to get permission from the White House to buy. That's not the way a free people operate. If I want to buy something from China, I've got a right to do so.
Yeah, you know what? Let me say something in agreement.
Very quickly.
I think you make a very strong point. If Americans don't like, you know, Germany or France or this country or that country, nobody puts a gun to anybody's head and requires them to buy these things. And I agree with you. I think, you know, as a patriotic duty, every American should on their own basically not buy stuff from China. I mean, just look, if it's got the China label, I look for the American label. I want to buy stuff in America. That's my right as an American. And I think you're right. There are a lot of Americans who are hypocritical who continue to buy this stuff from China, and then they want tariffs on the stuff, so they won't buy it.
Okay, very good. I want to get one. By the way, I'm starting a voluntary boycott of hipsters from Brooklyn. I don't like them. But one more question. If anyone wants to join me, please, we can all agree on that. All right, one more question, and then we'll move into closing arguments.
China's been accused of being a national security threat, a violator of human rights, and an aggressor in the South China Sea and elsewhere. In addition, a communist regime like China's, you could argue credibly that the ruling party driving those threats, violations, and aggressions are at the same time the biggest beneficiary of our free trade. In this instance, can the U.S. then justify protectionist policies?
Either one of you guys want to jump on that?
Well, that may, by the way, you're appealing to my conscience when you talk about there being human rights abusers. And let me say that maybe I do have to explore my conscience. For example, if I were told something is produced by slave labor, I really shouldn't ethically buy it. I would not ethically buy it. I wouldn't interfere with anybody else's right because they're not the slave masters. But I agree with you that's the point, that we have to look to ourselves individually as to whether we want to trade with China. It's none of Trump's business.
Yeah, I generally agree with you and the gentleman. I mean, you know, I didn't even mention the human rights violations, which are also outrageous in China. I mean, they had the biggest, you know, violation of human rights in human history with the one-child policy and, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, there's no religious freedom. There's no right of expression. There's all sorts of, political repression. They put people in jail who disagree with the government. It's a big problem. What we do about that, I don't know. I mean, I think you're right that we should all make ethical decisions ourselves about whether we want to buy stuff from a country that is totalitarian.
All right. That wraps up the question portion. Thank you for all the great questions. Excellent. And nobody was like too... Usually we have at least one person who gives their life story. Everyone asks good questions. All right, so we're going to move on to the closing.
Steve goes first.
Closing arguments and 7.5 minutes.
I don't need 7.5 minutes.
Seven and a half. Do you want to stand up? You want to stay?
I'll just sit. You know, okay. Look, I'm kind of out of I'm out of intellectual ammunition as who was that vice presidential candidate who used that term, Admiral Stockdale, many years ago. Look. You raised an interesting point about the United States and, you know, not having, you know, goods from Chicago
New York is putting an import tariff on something for Chicago. One of the things that has made America, there are many, many things that has made America the economically, a mightiest country in the history of civilization. But one of them is clearly the fact that it was ingenious. Our founding fathers were ingenious. They set up a system of a, well, at that time, 13 state, but now it's a 50 state free trade zone. So if you want to see the benefits of free trade, no question, look at the United States. It's precisely because people in Indiana can't put a tariff on things that are made in Illinois. And so free trade is absolutely one of the pillars of prosperity, with lower taxes, less regulation, sound money. But the fact is, sometimes you get into a situation, as we have gotten in with China, where we were wearing a kick me sign for the last 25 years. And to quote the ignoramus that you like to quote, I mean, he was right. The Chinese were laughing behind our back at this. They couldn't believe that the United States just kept taking this abusive relationship. And I'm actually proud of Donald Trump, even though I don't always agree with his methods, that finally we have a president who is staring down China. And I think the American people agree with that, too.
All right. Very good. Oh, to that. Very good. So, Gene, you have 7.5 minutes. If you can. Oh, look at that. He's offering you his time. That was a voluntary gift.
So. Steve is a very generous free trader. I give him that. He's a man of great character in that regard, and I like and admire him personally. And unfortunately, however, the realities are that this debate is not a level playing field. Since Steve would have the government assault our rights and material well-being, we must begin by rejecting Trump's trade war, unless Steve can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it will bring some overwhelming good. Put another way, Trump's trade war is guilty until proved innocent. And the arguments that Steve has put forward are conjectural and speculative at best. I want to read some inspiring words that go as follows. America's most valuable role in the global economy is to lead by example. Our most important gift to the world is to export the virtues of democratic capitalism and free enterprise. When we get it right, the rest of the world follows. That sounds familiar. Steve wrote that. And now, probably, he wrote, that's a book that he co-wrote with Arthur Laffer. And we all know that Art Laffer is a nice guy, but he doesn't have Steve's eloquence. So, Steve, you must have written that passage in the collaboration between you and Art Laffer. Laffer. And so
usually I love when people quote me. Oh, yeah.
those are inspiring words. And then I'll read some other inspiring words, which Steve will also recognize. The wise course for us is to move unilaterally toward free trade. And by the way, Milton Friedman meant, he wrote those words. He actually said that when he was challenged on when he was free to choose sessions, that obviously I want to move toward a freer world, but I don't want to wrench people who are living with a certain status quo. And so when he was challenged, he said, I want to ratchet down all the tariffs by 20% a year. The tariffs were a bit higher than any tariffs, and certainly 20 to 25 to 30% tariffs that Trump has been imposing are obviously, they obviously cause blood on the floor to Americans, and it doesn't really matter to me that much whether I feel sorry that it's also causing blood to the Chinese, since they are a very, very poor people. We make much of the fact that China's GDP is almost as high as ours, but we forget the fact that they have 4.5 times the population, so that their per capita GDP is a little over a fifth of ours. And we, a rich and great nation, are fighting an economic battle with them. Friedman continued that this is clearly the right course for action on economic grounds. Now, Steve wants me to be exercised by a centralized planning government stealing our intellectual property rights. again, though Steve knows that you can't steal intellectual property rights unless you have some entrepreneurship going on. I guess the best you can do is poach on some Apple stores, as Steve has said. And so we are afraid of a country that is, unfortunately, careening toward a potential unwinding that's similar to what happened to the Soviet Union. That is our fear. And Steve, who believes in free markets, who is proud of free markets, understands better than us, should understand better or at least as well as any of us, that the only way you can implement intellectual property is that if you have a free and entrepreneurial market. And so we should be sorry for what's happening in China. Sorry, aside from the awful fact of the outbreak of the epidemic in China, but sorry for the fact that their government has so mishandled things. And the best we can do is lead by example, to use Milton Friedman's words, to be a beacon to the free world. But that's obviously not on Mr. Trump's radar screen. He not only thinks that trade deficits are like red ink, he also can only work through the iron fist. And so he is not a leader we want to follow. If Steve meets with President Trump and manages to nudge him in the direction of doing a few good things, like deregulation, I only wish he had nudged Trump into doing a few other good things, like trying to tame our runaway spending. But if Steve is on balance playing a good role with Trump, that's fine. But tonight, I corralled Steve into defending not the good that Trump is doing, but the bad and the ugly. To continue with what Milton Friedman wrote, we are a great nation, the leader of the free world, yet we squander our political power to appease the steel, aluminum, and washing machine industries, which is actually quite prescient because that's what Trump has been doing specifically. We should instead be setting a standard for the world by practicing the freedom of competition, of trade, and of enterprise that we preach. And that's why Steve and I should both sign on this constitutional amendment. Radical change only happens when people start standing up for radical change. As Friedman said, you need those radical ideas on the shelf because you never know when you might use them, might need them. And to those who say that I have no sense of politics when I talk about the constitutional amendment, Congress shall make no law taxing imports or subsidizing exports, I say to them, you have no sense of history. Because radical change does happen, can happen, has happened, as long as there are radicals there backing up radicals like Milton Friedman to keep articulating the need for that radical change. And I invite somebody with Steve's insight and his abilities to rejoin us in that fight. Thank you very much.
All right, very good. Terrific debate. A round of applause for both of our debaters. Excellent job all around. Jane, if you wouldn't mind opening up the final voting now. Again, the resolution, we are better than the DNC in Iowa. We are going to get this thing right here today. We may have them now. Who knows? But anyway, once again, resolution is President Trump's trade-related...
Tootsie Rolls?
Oh, yeah, I got the Tootsie Rolls. You gave them to me. I didn't eat them. I've been on stage the whole time. Trump's trade-related initiatives against China deserve broad public support. That was the resolution. While you guys are voting on that, I'm just going to let you know some of the exciting debates we have coming up here at the Soho Forum. On Monday, March 7th, we have Columbia... Huh? Well, my copy says March 7th, so we're moving it. March 9th? Is that correct? Okay, Monday, March 9th. Clint, if you show up on the 7th, nothing's going
Sorry,
on.
It's my fault.
No, well, it's not my fault. Monday, March 9th, Columbia Law professor Tim Wu, author of The Curse of Bigness, will defend the resolution, antitrust should take the initiative to control the size of big tech companies, against NYU law professor Richard Epstein. No relation. Monday 6th. That's a good one. Monday 6th.
Free ticket for Steve to that.
Free ticket for Steve. It's coming from a Jewish economist. That's pretty impressive. Yeah, it's me. Come on, give him some credit. Nothing? Come on. All right. Monday, April 6th, from the Cato Institute, which was invoked 95 times today, adjunct fellow Dr. Jeffrey Singer will defend the resolution government policies imposing cutbacks on prescription painkillers, which came into full force around 2010, have been a tragic mistake that should be completely rolled back to the period before that, before the imposed cutbacks, against Sam Quinones, author of Dreamland, the true story of America's opioid epidemic. Then on Monday, April 20th, because we got two in April. Yeah. How about that? Monday, April 20th, the Mises Institute senior fellow Robert Murphy will defend the resolution to promote a Christian vision of human flourishing. Christians should support free market capitalism, against Reverend Dr. Anthony Capallo. And the guest moderator will be Judge Andrew Napolitano, friend of the Trump administration. A few of you guys got that one. All right, I appreciate it. And then I got to tell you the one that I am really looking forward to. Sunday, May 10th, the resolution will read, a willingness to intervene and seek regime change is key to an American foreign policy that benefits America and the world. The great Scott Horton will be debating against some fellow named William Crystal. Never heard of him. Anyway, that one's going to be great. Bill Crystal versus Scott Horton, Sunday, May 10th. That one is at a bigger... That's going to be held at the New School's Tishman Auditorium, because there's just a... That's a big draw, obviously. And then Monday... Yeah. Well, you were... In your defense, you were competing with the State of the Union, which I'm sure kept a lot of people at home. Monday, June 15th, in Orbs Intercity CEO... Rosaria Fortungo, I apologize to you already, will defend the resolution. Anonymous electronic vehicles will create a boost.
Autonomous.
Oh, Jesus. Well, this is why you're supposed to get smarter moderators. Autonomous electric vehicles will create a boost in personal freedom and quality of life and will be commercially viable within a decade, against Eric Peters, who is the author of Automotive Atrocities and Road Hogs. So we got a bunch of good stuff. And then finally, Tuesday, July 14th, Reason Magazine journalist Elizabeth Nolan Brown will defend the resolution. All laws prohibiting consensual sex work should be abolished, against the National Review journalist Madeline Kearns. So a whole bunch of fun stuff coming up here. Of course, you can go to thesohoforum.org for all the information on all of that stuff. How are we doing? Are we good? We have the results in. All right, here we go. Someone's getting a Tootsie Roll. All right, for the resolution, President Trump's trade-related initiatives against China deserve broad public support. To start off with the pre-vote, the affirmative got 15.05% of the vote. That moved to 36.56%. of the vote, a 21.51% change, whereas no started with 40.86% and also moved up to 58.84%, a 13.98% chance. So that is a victory for the affirmative. So the Tootsie Roll goes to Stephen. Round of applause for both debaters, everybody.